Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the long and winding Royal Road. This is episode 46. Let me just double check to make sure that I am correct on that. What was the last episode number? It was 45. So this is episode 46, everyone. I am recording this on a morning. I worked a long shift yesterday at work, and then I came home and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna watch this match, take my match notes, and then an hour in, I thought, you know what? Like, just decompressing from work, Karen. We'll talk about our guests in a second. But I spoil it for those of you listening, but you already know if you're watching it on YouTube. I came home in an hour and it's decompressing. Okay, gonna watch this match, and then I just like, no, I hit a wall, and I said, I'm going to bed. It's like midnight. I was like, I'm going to bed. Set my alarm for 7 a.m. this morning. It got up. It took me half an hour to finally get out of bed, and then I thought, okay, I'm just going down. Did my research, made my notes. Karen was like, hey, I was like, you know what? It's almost time for me to record, Karen. I never tell her, I'm going to be late. So here we are, though. But today, our returning guest to the long and winding railroad is the Empress here at Post Wrestling. It's Karen Peterson, everyone. Karen, thank you for your patience. Thank you for
no problem
coming back to the Royal Road. How you doing?
I'm well. We're recording on a lovely Sunday morning. We have fallen an hour behind, so Zelda was up at 4 o'clock being like, hey, it's breakfast time. And I'm like,
wait, did we fall back?
We fell back, yeah.
Okay, thankfully, I don't have analog anymore, except for like my Seiko watch, which I still use.
Yeah.
But like I have a digital watch. I, you know, my phone, like the computer. So everything is the correct time.
Yeah.
I always forget.
Yep.
When it exactly is. It's always the first weekend of November, right?
Typically, yeah. My but like same thing for me. Like I have a smartwatch, I've got a smartphone, even like the cable box automatically updates. So the only way I know that we've actually fallen back or sprung forward is the timer or the kitchen, the one on my oven and the one on my microwave are always wrong.
All right. Yes.
But I was just like, why is it 4? And I'm like, and look over at my watch. I'm like, oh no, that's right. This was the day. So now yeah. I have to readjust.
And now I do have an old like G-Shock, which I still wear. It's the same. You know what? The funny thing is I bought this style of G-Shock many, many, many years ago, maybe 25 years ago at a Dick's on a trip in Pennsylvania, I think. I thought, oh, that's a cool watch. And then later on, I discovered that Tom Cruise as Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible 2, in Mission Impossible, he has the same G-Shock. And I'm like, hey, that's my watch. So when
great minds,
the
right?
First one, well, when the first one I bought just broke because it was like 15 years old, I went searching. I was like, oh, my God, they still make it the same G-Shock. I didn't update, you know, my watch to like a new style of G-Shock. I said, I'm going to get the same G-Shock and I still have it. I do have to adjust that though. Like you do have to set the time on that. So yeah. I'm going to have to turn on DLS on that option. But my Garmin, it's a nice, beautiful orange color.
Lovely.
Is automatic. So it's connected to the internet, I guess. So it's connected to my phone, so I guess that it updates.
It probably got updated that way. But now it's, you know, good old when it comes to watching stuff in Japan for us, it's like a 14-hour time change instead of a 13-hour time change. So
sure.
I get to be miserable until March rolls around.
Sure. I can't remember if in Japan, I lived there for 10 years, Karen. I can't remember if we did DLS.
They don't have it.
They don't do it. No.
Nope.
I'd always have to adjust for when it happened here.
Correct.
When talking to like my family on the phone, it'd be like, oh, you're an hour behind now.
Yeah.
But the great meme is you fall back and you spring forward.
Correct.
We talk about so like
that's
I know
the way to remember it. We fell back last night.
Which do you prefer? Which one is preferable to you?
Well, for me, I prefer. It's difficult because I remember when I lived in Japan, because they don't fall back, it gets dark at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which in the winter is absolutely miserable. When there's like, I even though I don't go out in the sun, I do enjoy the sunlight. I prefer spring forward only because when I lived in Japan, it was the 13 hour as opposed to 14 hour time change. So there was a little more flexibility in scheduling calls home and stuff like that. So.
But, I mean, like where you are in Florida right now, do you prefer falling back in time or going forward?
I always hate losing sleep the older I get. So now I'm starting to fall into the, I like falling back because I get the extra hour as opposed to springing forward where you lose the hour.
Yeah, I am totally the same because I feel jet lag when we spring forward.
Yeah.
Well, when is that? In May? March? April?
March.
We spring forward.
Usually March, I think.
I'm like useless for about a week. I am so tired.
Same.
Just from 1 hour, losing 1 hour. It's crazy, but it's, you know, the older you get, it's unfortunately, you know. As they say, Karen, youth is wasted on the young.
It sure is. It most definitely is.
But there you go. Anyways, we're not here to talk about daylight savings times, really. We're here to talk about All Japan in the 90s, but actually we're not going to talk about All Japan in the 90s.
No, we're not.
Because sometimes we talk about, you know, matches that are from an adjacent promotion, from an adjacent time. So we've talked about Pro Wrestling Noah before on this show with different guests. And today, Karen and I are going to talk about a match from 2006, I believe. It's July 17th, 2000. And July 16th, 2006 from the Budokan Hall, one of my favorite places to watch wrestling. Have you been to Budokan?
I have not. It's on my list.
Yeah, I much prefer to Kokugikan Sumo Hall because the air conditioning
is much better.
It's much better in the summer. So I've seen the G1 finals at the Budokan. I think first time they did the G1 finals at the Budokan, they took it out of Sumo Hall and Jojo Remy. My former co-host Post Perez called or Japanese Audio Wrestling at the time. He called me up and he said, "Hey, do you want to go to the G1 in the Budokan?" I'm like, "Yes. Are you going to get tickets?" Because he's a member of the fan club of the New Japan fan club. He said, "I can get tickets."
Smart.
So there is a picture of me wearing my Post Wrestling T-shirt my first time in the Budokan, and it was wonderful. And I've been there maybe two more times, I think, to see shows. So.
Question for you, because you know you have the air conditioning scale, which is how you judge venues. As somebody who in the wintertime it has very thin blood and gets very cold, how's the heating situation?
Oh, I mean, heating is way better, right? In buildings like Rigoku Kokikikan is fine, is very comfortable in the winter, I feel. Once it gets filled, I think that's the thing. It's like, I don't think the ventilation is that great in the summer. That's why it feels so hot in there, especially if you're way up high. If you're in like the kind of 100 levels, like above the ground seating, you're generally fine in that area. But once you get a bit higher, the 100s are okay, tens. But once you get to like, I say, what do you call them? The 200s? Nosebleeds?
Yeah, like the mezzanine and the balconies.
It's not fun up there.
So it's a lower bowl sort of venue. You want to be...
Yeah, like so Budokan, I think, is just fine everywhere. Because it's, I think they updated it, like, just a better vet, you know, HVAC system, I suppose you could call it.
And as somebody who lives in Florida, HVAC makes all the difference in quality of life.
Yeah, but in wintertime, I've never really had a problem with feeling comfortable in a venue, except maybe the Tokyo Dome. In the sense, like
it's a little chilly in January.
Yeah, it's a little drafty in that building because, like, you know, because they keep the doors open from the lobby, and then like when people are coming inside in January, is you know, like it's for Wrestle Kingdom, it just like air comes in, it circulates a bit, and it's a circular building, so it's you know, I don't know, I have my own issues with the Tokyo Dome just as a venue to watch wrestling. And I think it's too big. I don't really enjoy, I don't think I'll ever go back unless other people want to go and they invite me or figure it out. But Cork and Hall all year round is a wonderful building to watch wrestling. And it's probably my favorite building ever to watch wrestling in. And much better than some of the like Legion halls and fucking high school gymnasiums and fucking middle of nowhere kind of silo barns I've seen wrestling in North America. In the summer, I hate wrestling shows in like North American indie shows in the summer, because most times they're not air conditioned and they're fucking terrible and the people smell bad regardless, and it's just worse in the summer. But again, we're not here to talk about smelly wrestling fans. We're here to talk about a match from July 16th, 2006, Budokan Hall, Pro Wrestling NOAH. 16,500 people in attendance on this show. That's a lot of people. This is kind of the peak, really the peak of Pro Wrestling NOAH. They would not be able to sustain this peak due to a variety of reasons. We'll talk a bit about those reasons because they're kind of related to the match that I picked. I picked this match for a couple of reasons. One, it features several of Karen's favorites. And I thought, hey, you know, this is better than her talking about people she doesn't really know. Not too much. Oh, there you go. Yes.
Just for today, I brought it out.
There you go. But we're going to talk about a tag match. It's a semi-main event on this show. It's the junior heavyweight superstar tag team of Naomichi Marufuji and Kenta, the first ever junior heavyweight tag team champ, GHC junior heavyweight tag team champions. You know what, Karen? They have the longest reign.
They still do?
And they have the most defenses. I think 690 days.
Holy smokes.
They held those titles. They were the first champions. They defeated Takahiro Murahama and Jushin Liger in the tournament finals. Great tournament. Oh, wow. If you can find it online. I recommend watching the entire tournament. It's great. But they kept those belts. Who did they lose them to? I forget. I think like Kanemaru and somebody, maybe. Let's see. I think I have it here. Oh, you know, I do have it here. Let's see. Champion number. Okay. They lost it to Kanemaru, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Takashi Sugiura. There you go.
Wow. But
9 defenses. Record has yet to be broken. I personally, unless you get 2 juniors, the level of charisma and star power and ability as Kenta and Marufuji, I don't think no one should ever break that record. I'll be honest, no team has equaled all those qualities I say about Marufuji and Kenta. And their opponents in this match are 2 of the heavyweight prospects, the big heavyweight prospects. Outside of, I'd say, Go Shiozaki, he's still kind of a rookie at this in this era in 2006. But your 2 big prospects for the heavyweight division are Takeshi Rikkyo, who is at this point in this time of this match is a former GHC heavyweight champion. He actually is the one who dethroned Kenta Kobashi in his legendary 2-year run as GHC heavyweight champion. A run I think Sugiura and like someone else top of my head have tried to replicate it, but you know, it's Kenta Kobashi. It's hard to replicate.
Yeah.
Kenta Kobashi. And then Takeshi Morishima, who would become a GHC heavyweight champion, I believe 3 times in the future after this period. But like, he's a sad story. Unfortunately, yeah. He's a bit of a tragedy in wrestling in terms of his deterioration of his health and his mental state. More importantly, we'll talk about that. But yeah. I picked this match because it was at the time I watched this in 2006. It was like one of my favorite matches of that year. With when you talk about 2006, my God, like between Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, Pro Wrestling NOAH, some stuff still happening in All Japan. And even in the down period of New Japan, there's like so many great matches. This stood out for me so much for a lot of different reasons, not necessarily only because of the action in the ring, though that's a big part of it, but also like what I felt at the time. And I'll talk about like how I felt about Pro Wrestling NOAH at the time, basically about these 4 guys following when I watching this match. But we'll talk a bit about the background and things like that. But before we get to the business of the match, we should take care of the business of, I'm not wearing it right today, but I wore it on the last time I talked to Karen on Post Perez for November. And that's the Long and Winding Railroad satin jacket.
It's very nice.
It's still available on chopped-tees.com for the pre-order. You save $13 US if you pre-order it. So it's, instead of $130, it's $117. If you pre-order, you guarantee the size you want. You guarantee the price. And Chopped Tees has a great, you know, return policy. Go to the website, read it, you know, inform yourself of it. But this is not made to order, Karen. This is once they're gone, they're gone.
They're gone.
Once the sizes you might be interested are gone, they're gone. You cannot get a small. If there's only five smalls and all five smalls are gone, you cannot get a small. Same thing with like a large or even up to a 3XL. Once those sizes are gone, they're gone. And once the jacket is gone, it's gone unless there's a massive, massive, massive demand for it. So who knows? But it's better to pre-order it. You do save some money, and shipping is included with all Chopped Tees things. And you know, the other thing I want to talk about with Chopped Tees is let me get to the part where it says more brands here, and then we got all these new colors. What the fuck?
I told you.
Look at that. The new color t-shirt.
New colors.
So it's the yellow tee. You also got the hoodie. Look at that. Lovely. Looks great. The same deal. Like, these are made to order, so they'll never run out, right? So the
unless I retire suddenly, then there'll probably be a fire sale.
And then you have kid size.
I know. In pink.
In pink.
There's pink here for adults too.
And then you got the crew neck here, right? Looks great. And then we have the what else? Where else? Like, you got the t-shirts.
I have a tumbler.
I'll get to that.
I want to work up to a coffee cup eventually, but you know what? I'm very happy. So yes.
Let me find the tumbler here. Here it is. Okay. There you go.
For all your beverage needs.
There you go.
Do not put it in the dishwasher or the microwave, and hand wash only. But yes, if you want to have coffee or other beverages with the Empress, there you are.
There you go. Big Bruce Lord. You want to drink? What is it you drink? Scotch? Is he a Scotch man?
He is a Scotch man.
If you want to drink some scotch from a tumbler, just go to Chopped-Tees.
I don't think he wants to at a 16-ounce tumbler.
Listen, I told you before, this man is big. He's tall. Takes a lot to knock this man out. 16 ounces? I don't think we'll even put a dent in the constitution of Big Bruce Lord. 16 ounces of scotch?
That'll put me down for 50 years old. 4 days.
Cured in like oak or something. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about with scotch. So I could just, he's probably like face palming himself right now.
What are you talking about?
Stop talking about scotch. WH, stop it. But yes, a lot of great. I don't have a tumbler. Jeez. I got three different brands on this platform and I don't got a tumbler, but that's okay. What's in there right now? That looks like a Frappuccino.
Yeah, it's the standard, whatever. It's, you know, probably an iced coffee, little heavy handed on the cream, but you know.
Well, you know what, John Cena, when you get this and you use it,
send me pictures.
Let us know. You let me know, brother. Because John Cena likes to buy pretty much fucking everything from Chopped Tees related to either post wrestling or Poison Rana. I think he's got everything.
He has one of my shirts, so thanks, Cino. You're the best.
He's got everything. He's great. Yes, we were big fans of John Cena, the both of us here. So, but there you go. Chopped-tees.com. The satin jacket pre-order is still available. They'll be shipping. This is November, so they'll be shipping sometime this month. There you go. And the tumblers, this new t-shirts, yellow and pink, kid sizes. New crew neck sweatshirts and hoodies. Come on, show some love to the Empress and to your boy WH Park here. But there you go, Karen. Let's talk about a bit about this background. Let me get my notes up here. So, You know, in 2006, I got to say, probably Noah was probably the most popular company in Japan, the number one company in terms of gate revenue, in terms of like discourse online among Japanese fans, and in particular, Western fans of Japanese wrestling, because, you know, at the time, it's the dark age for New Japan. It's like the Inoki office is running shit, and Tony Inoki is like sacrificing people left, right, and center to Pride MMA fighters. Hey, I'm going to put fucking Yuji Nagata in there with fucking Mirko Krokop. What the fuck? Are you insane? I wouldn't put a seasoned MMA fighter in there with Mirko Krokop, let alone a pro wrestler. I don't care how insanely delusional you are about the merits of a worked fighting style versus a shoot fighter. Anyways, Dragon Gate's on fire, but it's still considered kind of an indie promotion because it's mainly junior heavyweights. Joshi's kind of in the doldrums at this time, I feel. I wasn't even following Joshi at the time because, like, the peak was gone. But there are a lot of great wrestlers. It just, you know, wasn't, like, necessarily on my radar at the time. But here, you know what? All Japan was still recovering from the exodus of Noah. So, you know, but we had Noah. Noah was good. Like, for me, it's like Noah in Japan. Okay, my favorite. In America, it's Ring of Honor. 2006 Ring of Honor. Pretty sure I have to look up exactly what was happening, but I'm pretty sure I fucking loved Ring of Honor at the time. But here we go. Here's the problem, though. This was not sustainable. This popularity, Karen, a couple of reasons. One, it's the company still being led by Misawa. Misawa's broken down. Like, he still, when he has to, he can go. But my God, he's broken down. Kenta Kobashi is still a guy they rely on. He's out with cancer in 2006. Okay. He had his epic. Before that, elbow surgery. He's out. Knee surgeries. He's out. Retires eventually, you know, not too long after. He comes back in 2007. He's never the same. Then like the next prospect, not prospect, but the guy that they rely on a lot is Jun Akiyama, but like he's getting there. He's still got a lot of mileage in him, but it's like you can't rely just on one person. And then you also have Yoshihiro Takayama, who became a star because of the Don Fry fight and other fights he had in Pride, but like he's now splitting his time as a freelancer. He's not necessarily, he spends a lot of time in Noah, but not all of his time there. He's like winning titles. He's like a Grand Slam champion. He's IWGP champion, GP champion. He's a Triple Crown champion. He's like all these things, plus GHC heavyweight champion. You got Kensuke Sasaki coming in with Katsuhiko Nakajima, his protege at the time. But they're freelancing all over the place, so they're not necessarily reliable as people you can help build a company around. But that's okay, Karen, because we have a really deep roster especially of junior heavyweights, but this is a heavyweight company because it's comes from the era, from the mindset of Giant Baba, who pushed primarily heavyweight wrestlers and really didn't do too much with juniors. But Misawa's philosophy as a booker is different. He does have a strong junior heavyweight division because he has a lot of great junior heavyweight wrestlers. You have now Marufuji, you have Kenta, you have Kanemaru, you have you've got Taijima Ishimori coming in later. You have tons of people. I'm just blanking on names, but Takashi Sugiura is a junior at this time. But they need heavyweight wrestlers. But here's the thing: why not make your juniors heavyweights, open weights?
A concept.
Right. We talk about this in New Japan today.
Yep.
So like when we talk about that, we talk about Hiromu Takahashi and El Desperado should become heavyweights or open weights. It's wrestling. You can make anything seem real, especially it's the size difference is not that huge. But in 2006, we're talking about Kenta and Marufuji. Just push them. Give them wins over established people, established heavyweights, including, I would be online. Masao should put them over. Misao should put both, especially Marufuji. He should have put him over. Akiyama put him over. He won the GHC title. Didn't last long because they thought, oh, he's a junior. He's not drawing. It's like you didn't even give him a fucking chance. So this match is you have Kenta Marufuji on one side. Then you have Morishima, who is actually probably the best prospect for the heavyweight division, because again, Goshizaki is in the company, but he's not there yet. And he's a prodigy. He's like a natural, and you know, people love him, but he's not there yet. It would take, because also in Japanese wrestling, it takes a while.
Yeah.
For the management, I feel, more than fans, to accept someone to be like, okay, you could take the balls run. I kind of wish it was more like American wrestling. Okay, this guy's a star. Let's give him the push. You know, like mm-hmm. They do that now. They did that with Kiyomiya. Then they fucked him. But they did it Kiyomiya originally in Noah. But yeah, so here's the thing. I thought Kenta, more than Marufuji, because of his persona and his striking style, you could push this guy.
Yeah.
Just have to let him develop, you know, a training regimen to bulk up a bit. And they did eventually put the GHC title on him in the future, in like maybe 5 years from this point. It was too late then. So, yeah, this is just a great match for me. We'll talk about it. You watched this match for the first time?
I did.
And what did you think when you first watched it?
It made me, my knee jerk reaction was, I want more juniors fighting openweight. And not just them fighting as underdogs and losing. Like, I liked how the match played out at the end and how creative they got, both with their tag team moves as well as, you know, them trying to, like, Marufuji and Kenta fighting in a more heavyweight style. And conversely, very large men trying to do junior heavyweight things like Tope Suicidas.
That's true, yes. That's the thing about Morishima, especially. Like, if you watch his ROH world title reign, so he defeats Homicide, and then he has a great reign. I forget exactly how many days or how many defenses, but he has an amazing run with that belt. Unbelievable. He has some absolute wars with Bryan Danielson at the time. Like, this is the period where Bryan Danielson is like wearing an eye patch because Morishima hit him too hard in the orbital socket or something like that.
Oh, no.
But he is a guy, like, and then you think about Bryan Danielson is like a junior heavyweight, but no one cares because he's so good. Like, Marufuji and Kenta are like Bryan Danielson. Like, they're so good. No one would care.
Yeah.
I feel it's more management than it's the fans. And if you educate, take the time to educate people, like, these guys can be heavyweights. They can, you know, with their style, with their kicks and how, or their whatever, you know, like their technique, people will buy it. People wanted to buy it, as we'll talk about in this match. So yeah, I and we'll talk about Morishima, but it's just a sad state of affairs with that guy. But let's talk about this show. This is the semi-main event at the Budokan Hall. It's headlined by Jun Akiyama and Mitsuhara Misawa. A rare tag team outing for these two, because they're natural rivals and enemies at this point. But they team up to take on the team of Kensuke Sasaki and Yoshihiro Takayama, and they win that match in 22 minutes 30 seconds. But the rest of the card looks like this. Suwa defeats Mitsuo Momoda, who's like in his, I don't know, late 50s at this point. You know who Suwa is, Karen?
I would wager a guess and go with, is that Suwama? But I'm probably wrong.
No, it's a completely different person. Suwa was originally in Toryumon. He was a member of Crazy Max, which is the unit that spawned Shima.
Okay.
He left Toryumon/Dragon Gate because he was like, in his eyes, and I think to paraphrase him, he was tired of the social dancing wrestling scene because it was filled with boy band type wrestlers and all the units did dances, like, you know, the Italian Collection, Crazy Max, not Crazy Max.
I truly MGK. Missed out on that period of.
You would have loved you would have fucking loved Dragon Gate. Toriumon / Dragonlight, like, not only
everyone
you know,
keeps telling me I'm
Ikemen just, wrestlers, but also fuck, they were fucking amazing. But yeah, Suwa's a guy that he was great when he came to Noah. I was like, whoa, let's see how it fares. And like, he was awesome, great heel. His matches with Kenta, you should seek them out. He has an awesome rivalry with Kenta. 6-man tag team match, Abismo Negro, Junji Izumida, and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi defeat Atsushi Aoki, El Oriental, and Muhammad Yone in 12 minutes 56 seconds. 6-man tag team match, Kentaro Shiga, Takuma Sano, and Taman Honda defeat the Dark Agents of Akitoshi Saito, Kishin Kawabata, and Masao Inoue in 15 minutes 46 seconds. My God, a Dark Agents match that went more than 5 minutes. Ugh. They're not someone I enjoyed watching, if you can
Got
tell.
It.
Tag team match, Akira Taue teaming with Katsuhiko Nakajima. What a bizarre tag team that is. Defeat the team of Ipe Ota and Yoshinari Ogawa. You know, Ipe Ota is a junior you would have liked before he retired, Karen.
Oh,
retired too early. Okay. 6-man tag team match, El Angel, Mushiking Terry, and Taiji Ishimori defeat Charlie Manson, Mushiking Joker, and Psicosis in 17 minutes, 21 seconds. So there, I think that this is like a luchador. They had a lot of luchadors touring with them on this particular tour. And then in a singles match, two of your favorites, Karen, Minoru Suzuki took on and defeated a very still rookie, Go Shiozaki. But hey, you know what? Go Shiozaki stood in there before getting defeated for 16 minutes and 46 seconds. And then
we have to chase this whole card up.
Maybe. It's out there.
I'm curious.
It's out there. And then finally, the match we're going to talk about, Kenta and Naomichi Marufuji would take on Takeshi Morishima and Takeshi Rikkyo. So let's get into the match.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you two editions of Rewind Away, starting off with a film review of Death Warrior. As described, the 2009 classic features five of the best mixed martial arts champions from around the world forced to play a deadly game. Plus, we tackle TNA's Turning Point from 2009. Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be covering the historic Crossover 2 event, plus an Ask Away mailbag show, Rewind to SmackDown, and Collision Course. $6 a month gets you access to the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Marufuji Rikkyo start off, Karen, and there's an early feeling out process of Rikkyo keeping Marufuji grounded with headlocks. And yeah, with a short burst of action with, you know, Marufuji knocking Rikkyo down with this nice looking jumping shoulder tackle. Again, going to the point, like, if you book the match smart, you can make it believable that they can, like, knock, like, a guy who can knock down someone about 1.5 times the size in Rikkyo. But Rikkyo gets up right away from this and hits his own shoulder block on Marufuji, which knocks Marufuji down. I'm going to say, you know, first 5 minutes are nothing to write home about. It's just feeling out process. It's just them kind of just pacing around Marufuji and Rikkyo. But guess what? Around the 6-minute mark, Karen, Morishima tags in. And then, you know, Tells tags in Kenta. And fuck, it is on at this point. What did you think when these guys start just right away just getting into it?
It was one of those things, like, I think I also touched on this when I was last on the Long and Winding Railroad, is that 2006, like that time in of wrestling, I was living in Japan, and had I been watching wrestling in Japan, this match and Kenta in particular probably would have been very much my Kamiyoshi, he would have been the one I was like all chips in. I want like the posters, I want the t-shirts, I want all the things, because he comes out of the gate like a house on fire, despite, you know, Morishima being almost twice his size.
Yeah, so they have this great exchange. Like, Kenta is like, he's go, 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 especially if he's in there with someone, in, you know, like higher on the card than him, or someone who is bigger than him. He's just like, turns it on right away. There's no feeling out process with Kenta. He kicks him in the face. And then, you know, Morishima's not fazed by this that early in the match. No. Morishima's and him then start exchanging elbow strikes before Kenta starts slapping. Oh my God, these slaps, Karen. He starts slapping Morishima. He slaps Morishima. Morishima elbows him. He slaps Morishima. Morishima elbows him. And it's great. I love it. And like, he does, he looks believable.
Yeah.
He's going toe to toe with this guy, because it's also like the way he presents himself. He's angry. You know, he's like, fuck you. You're fucking bigger than me. I don't fucking care, because I'm better than you. That he believes this, right? You feel that, right?
Yes, very much so.
And it projects to everyone in Budokan. Can you imagine it projecting, like, if it projects to everyone in Budokan, 16,500 people in a building filled with 2,000 people in Corken Hall and like maybe 3,000 people in like house shows throughout the country, it's going to project. Just fucking book it. You know what I mean? Book it. They then switch to kicks to the face, both of them doing that to each other before Kenta fells Morishima with a running high kick, which knocks him down. And then Kenta just unleashes a barrage of stick kicks to the chest of a kneeling Morishima. How did you feel when you hear these kicks, Karen?
I could feel them rattling my lungs. I was like, I can feel the intensity. Even though it was like a 360p grainy video, I could feel everything. I could feel the intensity of the audience. I could feel the, you know, it was a good, I haven't felt that way about a match in a very long time.
He takes Morishima over with a fisherman buster suplex. That's pretty impressive too. It's like, okay, he's got power. He could take this guy over. He goes to the apron and, you know, he tries for a springboard off the top rope. Does slip a little.
Slips a little bit.
But okay, he drop kicks Morishima right in the back of his leg, or he drop kicks him right in the ass. Either way, it's effective. It knocks the man down. Kenta does the sequence of strikes, which is like a slap, spinning back fist chop, a kick to the head, which is a setup for his Busaiku knee, but it's not enough. Today's Morishima, as Morishima counters with a thrust chop to Kenta and then levels him with a series of lariats before going for a backdrop driver, which thankfully Kenta blocks. Marufuji gets back into the ring and saves his partner by thrust kicking Morishima in the face. Kenta gets in a kick to the head before both juniors do a tandem super kick slash sidekick to Morishima's head. Great stuff here. Like, again, like as a tag team, why not have them do this? Like, show their superior tag work as GHC heavyweight tag champions, you know?
Yep.
Morishima rolls out of the ring where Marufuji follows him out and just whips him into the guardrail several times. Morishima gets back into the ring and Marufuji decides to wear him down with a rear chin lock. So again, like this, there, you know, like the idea is like, let's do control segment on Morishima, but let's slow the pace of the match down. I wouldn't have booked that. I would have said, just keep hammering him, do a lot of devil tag teams and stuff like that, but it's okay. It's okay. It works too. Not as effectively as what Karen and I would rather have seen, but hey, you know what? Kenta tags in and hits a series of stiff kicks before applying a figure four headlock. Marufuji tags in, and you know, this is the funny part. They lock in this really weird looking double team Cobra twist. And I, you know, I think if it was like someone's skinnier,
yeah, it would have worked.
Morishima
he was trying to do the Manjigatame, the octopus stretch, but he couldn't get his leg all the way around him.
So yeah, Morishima was a big boy.
Yeah, he was, yes. Marf Uji was doing his best, but Morishima is very large.
If they did it to like Okada,
yes,
might work. I think it's just double cover twist slash octopus hold is kind of weird. I don't know if it's necessarily an effective looking move. Marf Uji hits Morishima with a splash in the corner and tries for his finisher, the Shiranui, but Morishima blocks it. Marf Uji tries for a cross body block, but Morishima catches him and just launches him in the air with a boom belly overhead suplex. And he like just tosses poor Marf Uji, like, I don't know, 2 feet into the air.
Yeah.
Great. Above his own head. Morishima's like, I don't know, like almost 6 feet tall. Rikyo tags in, picks up the pace with a series of shoulder tackles, lariats in the corner, and his own crossbody block off the ropes. The American team try for a series of double teams on Rikyo, but he avoids them, hits both his opponents with lariats, and then picks up Marf Uji, hits him with a nice looking power bomb. And let's talk a bit about Takeshi Rikyo here, Karen. I don't think he should have been the one to dethrone Kobashi. In hindsight is always 20/20. You should have given it to Morishima. That's what I think. I think he would have run because he's got more charisma than Rikyo, and Rikyo was a dud, unfortunately, as the guy who dethroned Kenta Kobashi, and he never got that belt back. Good tag team wrestler, I feel, especially in this tag team, but also with like other teammates that he had. But you can always push him as a guy you can insert in title matches, as a guy that can win a tournament or something like that, or go to the finals of a tournament. I think there's promise in Rikyo, but he just didn't have, like, it's all the stuff in between, like the big moves.
Yeah,
there's not much there. And like, if someone sat him down and said, like, let's try be a bit more creative, you should do these kind of things. And if he changed he had got more animated in his facial expressions, I feel he could have at least risen to a certain level than what he actually did.
Is he more of like a stoic personality compared to someone who's more animated like Kenta or Marf Uji?
Yeah, but I think he's a very introverted personality.
Okay.
Which is weird. He was a sumo before.
Yeah.
So he's not shy in performing in front of people.
Yeah.
And then he had troubles in sumo, so he was forced to retire from sumo, but then he got scouted by All Japan, and then he joined Noah, of course. He's just because of his size and his sumo background, they thought, okay, we got, maybe they thought they had a potential another Jinichiro Tenryu on their hands. They did not.
Got it.
He's Tenryu is a once in a generation talent. Yeah. You're not ever going to replicate a Tenryu, in my opinion. It's like everyone tries to replicate, you know, the Four Pillars or Jumbo or Inoki, and you can't do it. Tanahashi's never going to get replicated. You know what I mean?
So. Correct.
Rikyo tries for a top rope avalanche backdrop, but Marf Uji blocks, attempts a Shiranui from up there, but thankfully Rikyo blocks that. Marf Uji finally gets in position to deliver a top rope powerbomb to Rikyo. So looks impressive. Not that he hoists him, he's like he rolls forward.
Like a more like a sunset flip.
Sunset flip kind of like powerbomb. From the top rope. But hey, he got the big man down.
He sure did.
there's a super kick on Rikyo, and then Kenta tags in and hits a running high kick and follows up with the springboard clothesline, not slipping on the ropes this time. Thank you very much. He then tries for a tornado DDT, but Rikyo blocks it and tries for a suplex, but Kenta escapes that, dodges a clothesline, and hits a hard slap to the face. He just likes, he just doesn't care. He's like, I'm going to slap the shit out of my opponent. But Rikyo just retaliates with his own hard slap that knocks Kenta down. And Kenta just like slumps. He just like sells it so beautifully. He's like, whoa, like this. And the crowd loves it. The crowd's so into like these like exchanges from the juniors, but also the retaliation by the heavyweights. Because I think here's the thing about Rikyo and Morishima and Kenta and Marufuji is like the fans want to see these guys succeed. The fans yeah. are invested in all four of these guys. I would say particularly in the juniors, and they're not going to like, we'll hear this throughout the, if you watch it, when you watch this match, you'll hear it like from the crowd. They don't care that they're juniors. They want to see it. It's not just me and you projecting. It's there. You can hear yep. it, right?
Yes, you can.
Morishima hits the ropes and hits a sitting down Kenta with a running hip attack, and then follows up with a handspring splash into the corner. Again, like this other thing about Morishima is like he has such a wide range of offensive moves for a bigger man.
Yes.
He's very agile. He's very fast. He's yeah. a very fast guy, near 300 pounds.
Brody King reminds me of him.
Yeah. I think Brody King.
A very large man that can do very wild things. Same thing with Jeff Cobb's the same way.
Wasted in all Elite Wrestling right now. Brody King should be pushed a lot higher. You know?
Yes.
But hey, that is what it is. Anyways, he then starts pummeling Kenta until Marufuji stops him. But this brings Rikyo back into the ring, and he holds off Marufuji. And so Morishima can hit this vicious, brutal-looking Urinage on Kenta that I think just like almost going to send him straight through down to Australia or something, through the earth or something like that. And this is like, we're about halfway into the match, right, Karen?
Yeah.
And this crowd is, they're clapping. At some point, they stomp their feet. They love this match.
I what I would give to be able to experience that level of energy at a Japanese pro wrestling show. Because even when I've been to shows in Japan, there's been you know, a good energy, but nothing on this level. Nothing.
It's a different era, you know.
Yeah,
it's something I talk about a lot more recently. Like I've been to my fair share of live shows that I think can match the energy of this. I've been lucky in that regard, but I think it's hard to, because people don't believe in wrestling as real as they used to. 2006, people still believe wrestling is real.
Yeah,
to a degree. You don't have things like DDT and indie promotions and American wrestling, what American wrestling becomes, to expose wrestling as being completely fake and entertaining and like just let's it's a variety show and not a sporting event. Fuck you. I want a sporting event. Fuck your entertainment. Fuck your variety show. Fuck your vaudeville. You know, I'm not opposed to like characters and stuff like that, but when in the ring, I don't want people fighting invisible fucking people, invisible referees or bullshit like that. Fuck you. Give me the shit. Anyways, off my soapbox. Morishima climbs to the top, but Kenta catches him up there. Oh my God. He just does this. He kicks him, jumps up, and he hits a fucking superplex on Morishima. Who cares? You can do this stuff to Morishima. Yes, it's a cooperative fucking worked sport, but who cares? Like, you're presenting this.
I want more of this in modern Japanese wrestling.
Why don't we have this in modern Japanese? Like
Hiromu and Desperado and Kushida are right there. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's not for lack of options. Just go with it.
Marufuji and Kenta attempt a springboard splash off of Kenta's back, kind of like the, you know, like the Hardy Boys move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
The way this turns out.
How does it turn out?
He just kind of catches him and just dumps him right on top of Kenta. And I was like, what? Like, 'cause I don't remember anything like that happening recently. So I was just so caught off guard because I'm so used to it being so formulaic. And, you know, this was a move that Roppongi 3K in the day did it all the time, and all the time it would connect. I don't think you ever really saw anyone catch someone and just be like, no, this doesn't work for me, Chief. So it was it was a very pleasant surprise, even though it was my favorite skin.
I think recently Gunther in WWE.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
Did the same thing, except he dumped Sheamus onto Drew McIntyre.
Good grief. That is a very large man throwing another very large man.
As I recall.
Onto a very large man.
Yes. That would suck a lot worse than having Marufuji or Kenta dumped onto Marufuji.
Yeah.
It's Sheamus being dumped onto Drew McIntyre.
Like 240 pounds of just muscle man.
That's right. pure muscle Irishman being dumped on pure muscle Scottish man. by Austrian. He's not German, he's Austrian. Should make sure I don't make that mistake there.
Correct.
Both junior heavyweights roll to the outside. So he dumps Marufuji on Kenta's, not just his back. He dumps him on his head.
Right on,
dumps
like, him on his head. On.
They both roll up. Marufuji and Kenta roll out to the ring, but they're not safe out there because Morishima hits the fucking ropes and hits both of them while they're on the floor with a tope suicida. Not just any kind of tope suicida, Karen. This is a very graceful, very beautiful looking tope suicida.
Yes. For a very large man, it was he floated more than he fell. It was
I would even say for a very large man. I've seen him do this, looks better than like even like guys like five times smaller than him.
Yeah. You know?
It's because he has for a man his size, like, and this is the great thing about Morishima that he exhibits in like in his career before, you know, things go south for him, is that he has an amazing body control.
Yeah,
like he just knows like how to control his body when he's flying through the air. He's using his power, whether he's trying to be more agile. He just a fuck, what a prospect this guy was. Like I was reading some commentaries, like some comments of people. See, the reason people didn't believe him because he was fat, and I'm like, no one cares in wrestling. You know, big dudes are like champions, have been champions in wrestling. What do you look, Dusty Rhodes? No one cares. Because Dusty Rhodes was charismatic as fuck. And to a degree, he was believable. Well, guess what? Morishima, at near 300 pounds, doing a tope suicida on two juniors, knocking them down, looks believable because he was a talented guy. No one cares about his body image in wrestling. Like, he looks, he's bigger dude. But guess what? He wears his size.
Yeah.
Like, it's believable. Like, he'll kill you. Yes. You get into a fight with this guy, this guy will kill you if you get into a fight with him. Morishima rolls Kenta back into the ring and hits him with the beautiful looking kitchen sink knee to the breadbasket. And then he tags in Rick Gale. Both these men, both members of the tag team, is called the fans called them the Double Takeshis, because they're both named Takeshi. But their official tag team name is Wild 2. So both members of Wild 2 decide to torture Kenta a little by doubling up on each other and standing on his breadbasket at the same time. That's like 600 pounds on your breadbasket. It's
no,
a work.
You.
It's a work standing on him. But it's the thought about it. It's like, oh,
when you see them and then the ropes bowing underneath them as they're putting all their weight onto the ropes to like make it look like they're not crushing the life out of him. I was like, man, I hope Kenta has a good chiropractor.
Morishima then locks in kind of a half style camel clutch, but Kenta is too close to the rope, so he's not going to submit. Wild 2 hit a double shoulder tackle. Rikkyo is now the legal man, and he hits a second rope foot stomp on Kenta's poor stomach area. This made me wince and laugh, because as soon as he hits Kenta's stomach, he bounces off Kenta's stomach and lands face first onto the mat. Which, yeah. I was like, oh, poor Rikkyo. He just couldn't find the balance to like bounce off him onto his feet.
Hey, it happens, you know.
Morishima tags in, applies a vicious looking stretch muffler onto poor Kenta here. Wild 2 then stand on Kenta's neck together in the corner. Just so like chiropractor, he's gonna need to go to chiropractor does your neck too, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Everything from like here all the way down to your backside.
So there you go. He's gonna have to see a specialist for that. Marufuji tags in and tries for some kind of top rope move while like holding Riccio's hand, but he slips, unfortunately. And to his credit, Riccio doesn't like stand there like an idiot and think, "Whoa, we watched the spot. What am I gonna do, guy? This wasn't in her rehearsals." What we talked about before, he called it in the ring. Riccio capitalizes, grabs Marufuji, and then Morishima comes in and they try for a double team, but Marufuji ducks, hits a low altitude drop kick to the knee of Morishima. He then tries the same on Riccio, who avoids, but Marufuji, this is beautiful, he slides between Riccio's legs and hits Morishima, drop again, kicks him in the head. It's great. I love it. This is like from a botch. This is like a sequence that's immediately after a botched attempt at a top rope move. And like
they just keep going.
They just like, fuck it. Okay, let's continue. Right. No bullshit in modern wrestling is like, especially, you know, I would say indie level, like anywhere, like, oh, we didn't rehearse this. This is not what we rehearsed. We are lost now because we're losers and we don't know how to actually wrestle. Yeah, I said it. Let's continue. Marufuji does hit he hits it a second time, the drop kick, and then hits a sliding D clothesline. This is before the sliding D becomes a thing with Masato Tanaka for a two count. He then gets Riccio up for Jimmer suplex for two count. He gets Riccio up for Jimmer suplex. Marufuji does. So both these guys can get these guys over in like over their heads with different types of suplexes. What? And the crowd buys it. And the Budokan is the most loyal fan base. Like it's in the sense that like they're not just going to accept anything.
Yeah.
But if they believe it, they're going to stick with it. With the fans, and that's who you want to draw back to for your big shows are the Budokan fans in Tokyo. Let's see. He then gets Riccio for the German suplex for each count. He hits a super kick, but Riccio comes back with a running headbutt to Marufuji's sternum. I like this. This is like he gets, you know, he just like runs at him with his like head like this and just battering rams him in the sternum. Great stuff. This is why I always think Riccio has like kind of potential, like more potential than he actually eventually had. He's like he could come up with like creative things, like how to use his size like this and his power. Morishima tags in and runs to the top rope and hits a missile drop. So he runs to the corner. He climbs up the top rope, Garrett. Oh my god! And he hits a fucking missile drop kick from the top rope. This man fearless. He doesn't care how big he is. Body control.
Incredible.
He hits a boss man slam for a near two. Wild two then try for the doomsday device, but Marufuji rolls forward and tags in Kenta, who hits a power slam on Morishima. He tries for a power bomb, but he can't get Morishima up and over. However, German suplex does get the big man over. So again, German suplexes from both Marufuji and Kenta on their larger opponents. The crowd buys it. Crowd loves it. Busaiku ni is hit, and then a series of kicks to Morishima's head for a two count. This is the thing about Kenta is like, it doesn't matter how big you are. If he hits you in the head, like he hits you multiple times in the head, with things that look this stiff, people will buy that he can beat you in the ring. He can become a singles champion, a tag team champion. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how vast the size difference is between him and his opponent, Karen.
I don't know if Kenta listens to the Long and Winding Royal Road, but if he could bring back some of this energy into present day Kenta, I'd really appreciate it.
We see flourishes.
He teases it here and there, but yeah. I want that level of consistency. I know he can't go the way he did 20 something years ago, but yeah.
I always said like if he just kicks people really hard.
Yes, if kick people hard, please.
It's fine.
Safely, but really, really hard.
You can kick people really hard safely in wrestling. You just don't kick. Just don't give them a concussion. That's all. Or break a orbital bone, and then you're fine. Yeah. Just kick them in the chest.
Not in the head.
Yeah. Double team avalanche. Shiranui powerbomb combination. His hit by Maruken, and then Kenta hits the go to sleep. What he gets him up, he gets him over, hits the go to sleep, but Morishima kicks out at 2.9. I love this sequence, Karen.
What I love is that it speaks to what you said earlier about them being believable contenders despite being juniors. With Kenta hoisting someone that size onto his shoulders when he's much slimmer than he is now. Well before he went heavyweight. So I found it very impressive, but I still believed it. Like, it reminded me of, you know, when Danielson was Brian, you know, Daniel Bryan, I could genuinely believe that he could win the match. I felt very invested.
This is a match Brian Danielson, Daniel Bryan has with Brock Lesnar, where Brock Lesnar is just ragdolling him. Yeah. And then there's a moment where he low blows him, but because he's the heel.
Yeah.
If he wasn't the heel, he wouldn't have done that. But yeah. He would have come back. He would have found a way to exploit an opening that someone the size of Brock Lesnar would have given him.
Yeah.
And he fucking takes it to Brock Lesnar. He fucking brings it to him. And it's like, I think he should have beat him in that match. That's just, you know, I remember he should win.
Yes.
Brock Lesnar doesn't need it. Wouldn't hurt him. If Bryan Danielson beats you, who fucking cares? It's Bryan Danielson. They got it eventually.
Yeah.
Think about this. The fucking WWE fucking finally got it. Begrudgingly, but they got it.
Yeah.
With Danielson. Oh, he's too small. No, it's like, fuck, he's over. They had it with both these guys, Kenta and Marufuji, or they were close to getting there with them. Like, and if they committed, they would have got there long before, 2-3 years earlier. Yeah. Than when they finally decided, yeah, these guys, we rely on them as our main event guys. But it's after the fall, after the death of Misawa, after the 2011 Yakuza scandal, and all this, yeah, other, and like the stuff with like Morishima, you know. But yeah, Zelda knows what I'm fucking talking about.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. But one thing I do like about the sequence is that, you know, like, he has to go to sleep. Riggio is outside the ring. He's rushing back in, but he's blocked by a photographer at ringside, and he just fucking like fucking face palms him out of the way. Get the fuck out of my way. Thankfully, Morishima probably sensed that, oh, he's not going to be able to. I think the booking plan was for Riggio to save him to protect, yeah, the finisher, but like Morishima realized, oh, he's not fucking getting,
not gonna
here
make
time.
It. Ugh.
He's like a microsecond too late.
Yeah.
But Morishima just kicks out anyways. It's fine. It's fine. Like, I think because of the way the match is booked, like it's okay that he kicked out of the finisher. Like Kenta's finisher. Riggio lariats Marufuji, Busaiku ni to Riggio, but Riggio retaliates with a lariat, and all four men are spent and on the mat, and this crowd is loving every minute of this, Karen. Like, I like sequences where like guys hit big moves or even their finishers, but they can't cover because they're just so exhausted.
Yeah,
it's great. There's a backdrop driver from Morishima on to Kenta, 2 count. Crowd is going wild. They're like loving it. Sliding D lariat for a 2 count. Marufuji hits the Shiranui on Morishima. Again, this is another, they do the same kind of sequence. Marufuji hits his finisher on Morishima. Riggio hits his Muso Slam on Marufuji. And then Kenta hits the Busaiku Ni on Riggio. And again, all four men are on the mat, exhausted. This crowd is just clapping. They're stomping their feet. They're like, we want this to be our next generation of main eventers. We want to follow this company. We want these guys to lead our company. That's what they're telling me with their reaction, Karen.
It's one of those things where it takes a lot to get that level of hype, but at the same time, if the audience is that invested, capitalizing on that energy so it continues beyond the single match is key.
Morishima hits a lariat on Kenta for a 2 count. Kenta cradles Morishima for 2, and then a schoolboy for 2. Morishima hits a lariat for two. Time is running out. The ring announcer is like saying, yeah, we've got like 3 minutes left. Morishima then tries for a cradle on Kenta to no avail. Then there's a slacks exchange between the two. Morishima tries for a pin. And then, as you know, ref counts one and then he's up. Time runs out. Fantastic match. I think Meltzer gave it four and a half stars at the time. I would have given it, I give it close to that 4.5 stars. My only thing is that I think there should have been a decisive winner. How do you feel? Do you think about it? Do you think it's the time limit draw, 30-minute time limit draw is fine, or would you have booked it differently?
I think the time limit draw is fine. However, if there needed to be a decisive winner, I would have wanted Kenta Marufuji to get the win. And I know people like that. I feel like that would be, it could have been a turning point opportunity for the entire company.
I think so. I would have booked it when Kenta cradles Morishima. That's when he should have won.
Yeah.
Right, that's when he should have won. Then you could still protect both Morishima and Rikkyo, but he gets the win because like he outsmarts him.
Yeah,
but also because he warmed down enough to a point where he could cradle him for the pin. I would have done that. Then I would have had them win the GHC heavyweight tag titles. There is a match where they fight Misawa and Yoshinari Ogawa for the GHC titles. It's a great match, but at the time, when I watched it, I thought they should win. This is when Marufuji should really have pushed both those guys because they were the best. They're not only the best tag team in NOAH, they're the best tag team in Japan at the time. I'm gonna go so far as to say that.
I love that.
So it would have been believable. So I would have booked it. Like, there's a lot of things, like if you understand Japanese pro wrestling promoting, because a lot of the shows are, even for like a company like New Japan and NOAH, a lot of the shows are at the time bought shows.
Yeah.
They go to local promoter and look, you know, there's like all this like, you know, sponsors taking people out to dinner, go drinking with the sponsors who are sometimes, you know, some of them are the promoters. They want to see, no, we bought this show. We're selling the tickets for you. We want you to be the main event. And usually they wanted Misawa. You have to understand the TV deal, TV penetration in for wrestling for anyone is not what it is. This is before streaming exists. It's 2006 before streaming. This is for the fucking YouTube, really.
Yeah.
It's whatever NOAH time slot is on NTV is like probably late at night.
Late night.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So like the casual fans out in the, you know, the Inaka areas of Japan, the countryside, maybe they don't know who Marufuji and Kenta are, but they don't take the time to educate them. So a lot of the promoters would be like, no, they tell Misawa, we want you to be champion again. He might try to take a risk, but it's like, okay, you want Akiyama to be champion again. Well, Kobashi's out. He's got fucking cancer. He's got another surgery. You know, how about these guys? Who are they? We don't know who they are. So part of it, I blame like 60% of it actually on NOAH management, including Misawa, because I think they should have just said, this is what we're giving you.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it.
Sponsor culture had too tight of a grasp on everything.
Yeah. Promoter culture, sponsor/ promoter culture.
Got it.
Yeah. There's a lot of this like revealed in like some biographies of different people. I think Misawa's biography goes into it a lot. Not that I've read it, but like what's been translated online by reliable sources have like basically revealed like he didn't want to be top guy. He was like, oh fuck no, I want these other guys to, but the promoters for the spot shows, for the house shows were like, no, we want you to be in the main event. We want you to be champion and things like that. I do think, again, Morishima he does win the JC title. He's a heavyweight champion for them. He's a star for them for a while. But you know, he's got the injuries pile up. He's also diagnosed with diabetes, which I don't think has any bearing on if you can be a pro wrestler or not. It's not like if you're a hemophiliac, sure.
Yeah.
If you're diabetic, I don't think as long as you maintain your blood sugar levels with like medication and exercise. Yeah. Okay. But he suffers also, more importantly, like some kind of emotional and mental breakdown where his behavior is incredibly alarming. And there's like articles about it online. I'm not going to go too deep into it, but the problem is like Noah can't trust him. Yeah. So they force him to retire. He doesn't want to retire to the point where a couple of years later, he stages like an unauthorized visit to Noah, grabs the mic and says, "I'm coming back." And they're like, "What? I was there."
Wow.
They're like, and like, it's being translated for me by the person I'm at the show with, and they're like, "Yeah, he says he's coming back." And like, but they, and then we're all like, "Well, they don't look too happy that he's saying this," and they're not.
Yeah,
completely. He did a shoot. They were like, "Fuck you! You know, you're not coming back."
Yeah,
you know. So, it's sad. And then he got arrested for, like dodging taxi fares and like assault and things like that. It's a really sad story with Morshim. And it's compounded by the fact that I think he had so much promise.
Yeah.
You didn't see it coming with Morshima.
Yeah.
So, but Sugiura, Mara Fujikenta all become GHC heavyweight champions down the line, you know, before Kenta goes to WWE. Big mistake for him. He did become friends with the Iconic, so I guess there's that.
And him going in NXT, he was at the very first NXT house show I went, and he won the match and went around the ring. So my very first NXT show, he won the match and took pictures with everybody at ringside. That's how I got into Japanese wrestling. That fan service around the ringside changed my life.
All right.
So I would not be here if it wasn't for Kenta.
Karen being here on the long and winding road today is because of Kenta.
It is.
Mistakenly going to WWE. So I'll allow it. But also, yes. Like, he became really good friends with the Iconics.
Yes.
There's that. Probably the best things to happen out of his WWE run.
Yeah.
Fortunately, got injured, but never been the same.
Yeah.
Too bad he didn't stay. I just think he should have stayed at Noah. I understand why he left, but
yeah.
Anyways, all junior heavyweights eventually become heavyweights, keep the company afloat to one degree or another. And hey, especially Sugiura, you should have just done it sooner. Just push these guys, especially Sugiura. He doesn't look that much different. He's a bit bigger.
Yeah,
he's a lot leaner and like more cut than he was as a junior. He looked more like a fucking fire plug, right? Like now he looks like just a cut machine.
Yeah,
you know, like wrestling machine at the age of 50 something or other.
Yeah,
that guy's a beast. I don't know. It's going to be weird when he's not wrestling anymore, but just suicide. It's a shame. It's a shame for me as a Noah fan at the time. Like, as I see this, then New Japan makes her come back and it's like, it's done. And then all the Misawa's death, the Yakuza scandal, Morishima going where he went and Just a mess. And, but you know, hey, they're on Wrestle Universe. They're part of Cyber Fight, you know, company of wrestling promotions. They're doing okay. I'd like to see the booking kind of return more to 2006 almost, but you know, it is what it is. Wrestling booking in 2024 is what it is, Karen.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
It's coming to terms with it is a little bit of a challenge at times, especially when every now and then I get served up a quality match like this. And I'm just like, now I understand, but can I have some more now, please?
You understand where my saltiness comes from about modern wrestling, right?
Yeah, I do.
When you see like what I was coming up with.
I know. You
know, 90s junior heavyweight wrestling, 90s All Japan wrestling, this stuff in the early 2000s.
Yeah. I understand.
There's bad wrestling these days. It's just not as consistent, I feel.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's our match. 30-minute classic from Marufuji Kenta taking on the Wild 2, Takeshi Morishima, Takeshi Rikkyo. Final thoughts, Karen?
Thank you for picking a match that was very much in my wheelhouse, even though I didn't really watch 2006 Noah at the time. I really enjoyed watching the match, and it's been a while since I've been on, you know, this program. We do many programs together, but
yes,
being able to learn more about a time where I could have been watching wrestling, but I didn't have the means or the window of opportunity to get into it, I appreciate it. So I'm glad to be back.
Hey, making you feel regret about the time you wasted in Japan is my goal. Yeah, on this show, for sure. For sure. Anyways, you know what? We're not going to have a December show. I'm going to Japan a couple of weeks.
I'm going to be so there for 3 weeks.
I come back first week of December. I'm not recording anything except post Perez with you. Maybe something MCU later. I don't know. I have to talk to Rich about that. But hey, we'll be back. I'll be back on later. I'm recording later today with Rich Fan and Nate Milton. We're recording the finale for Agatha All Along. Have you watched Agatha All Along?
I watched it last night.
I except for one thing, I thought they stuck the landing on that. Did on they? That two-part finale. The only thing that didn't stick with me was like what I was hoping would happen. It didn't happen, but I won't say anything more than that for those people who haven't watched yet. But check that out on the Cafe side of things. It's not a freeloader show like this. You get Way made five. I said he's not going to make the first 5 minutes of the last episode I did with with Nate free, and then he made a different 5 minutes free.
don't mess with the tech man.
So I thought that was pretty funny when I saw that on social media, the listing for last week's episode of FCU later. But there you go, me. Nate Milton always joins us for the finale of any series that we do. Nate Milton's coming on, the Podfather himself. I think I'm supposed to do something on the NWA. What is it? The big Christmas bash or whatever it's called?
The holiday kickback.
Something like that.
Right? We've apparently been invited to the barbecue, which is the cookout, which is kind of exciting. But
it's going
to
be a 17-hour show for everyone. Not because they're raising money for anything.
Just because
it's the NWA podcast. That's why.
I just need to get in early on it because if it goes past my bedtime.
I'm telling Nate, listen, you got to depend. I got to figure out what day of the week is that supposed to be?
I believe they're recording it on a Sunday, the 22nd.
That should be okay. I'm going to request I get in early.
I don't know if they're live streaming the whole thing or if they're cutting it and releasing it later, but The 22nd was the day we were told to block it off for the kickback.
I think they live stream everything, and that's why it goes to like
four or five hours
sometimes. So. Listen, I'm not making fun of them. This is something Nate will fucking tell you to your face. Yeah, my show's really long. Yes, it
is. I see how long their shows are when they crop up on the post YouTube, and I'm like, wow. My voice would be shattered after that much talking in one episode, let alone a whole day of it.
But hey, you know what? They have their dedicated listeners who love the show because they do a great job on there. Nate
they
Milton,
do.
Dr. Chris, and of course, the youngest in charge, Andrew Thompson, do a great job. They give great analysis, and they are very passionate about what they talk about. That's why these shows are so long. That's why this show is almost going to be 90 minutes long. But we're gonna stop you here. No. I'll see you probably back in January. We'll kick off 2025 with. Match. I don't know who the guest will be.
We have to do post Perez in January. There'll be some combination of Wrestle Kingdom. We don't know. We're working on the Wrestle Kingdom, Wrestle Dynasty logistics with some other team members because it's a lot of wrestling in 1 week. So we'll figure it out.
Yes. Okay. Finally, new Tumblr, new colored t-shirts for the Empress, chop-tees.com, satin jacket. Also, if you want
the flex cap or the snapback. This is the dad hat's not available, but I got my dad hats, the Post Wrestling logo. I got my Poison Rana hoodie. I love this thing. This is like, I've got two. I got one of the prototypes, which they weren't happy with. So I got the newer one where the logo on the back is the frog's a little bit lower from Richard Avian. But I wear this around the house. It's so nice. This keeps me warm and cozy here in autumn, early winter.
We love cozy.
So, hey, check out Poison Rana. They got a lot of new stuff up there. If you want to support the boys, Braden and Davey, just give them a fucking buy some of their shit. It's all up there. It's all good. The designs, like, I wish I was as creative as Braden. I think Braden does most of the designs.
Really? They're yeah, so good.
So. They're really good. Like, he comes up with a lot of great ideas. Anyways. Thank you, everyone, for listening to The Long and Winding Road. We'll be back in 2025. Karen and I will be back in December for post-Perez to do our year end. I don't think we're going to talk for the whole year.
We're going to end up talking about your vacation, though, let's be honest.
Probably about my vacation. Talk a bit about the big things that happened, like Zach and Mario Gold happening, shit like that.
Stardom stuff.
But we'll probably just keep it a year-end review more towards like just kind of part of the show. And then we just look forward towards like Wrestle Kingdom and some of the other shows that are going to happen in January of 2025. But hey, MCU later, Pro Wrestling Cafe, you subscribe, not just for that. Just there's tons of shit up there.
So much stuff.
Amazing, amazing content over on the cafe side of things. It's not expensive. It's pretty affordable. You just have to give up Starbucks for like two visits to Starbucks a month.
Not even like, but even the lower tiers is like a less than a cup of coffee.
There you go. Fuck Starbucks for one visit, and you can go to the cafe and hear MCU later talk. Rewind away.
New Japan reviews with me and Bruce.
New Japan reviews. That's big Bruce Lore drinking 16 ounces of scotch out of a an Empress tumbler on air. You're not gonna see that for free.
No. Not for the freeloaders.
That's right. You pitch this to Bruce Lord tomorrow on your Power Struggle review.
That will be a struggle for power.
All right. I always have problems ending this. So until next time, thank for Karen Pearson. My name is MJH Park. Until next time, see you later and goodbye.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Now at Menards, saving money on everything to brighten your home. Bite Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Customize your home with dimmable, color-changing lighting that better fits your lifestyle. And control your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of smart home products from Bite Electric today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save.